from the number one sports site in the world.
Yahoo!
This is Yahoo Sports Radio.
YahooSportsRadio.com.
Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Yelovich is an own goal! It's an own goal!
With your host, Joe Mago. From Yahoo Sports and Yahoo Sports Radio.
It's five! It's a landslide!
Joe Mago and all the insiders from the FC Yahoo Soccer Blog bring you coverage of soccer across the world.
Premier League,
MLS,
Champions League,
La Liga,
Serie A,
and Bundesliga. It's all the coverage from soccer across the world.
This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Oh, it's going in!
Right now. From the Yahoo Sports headquarters in Playa Vista, California, here's your host, Joe Mago.
Well, they let us back in the building. Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. I'm Joe Mago, editor of the FC Yahoo Soccer Blog on Yahoo Sports. Joining me for episode number two of our weekly chat about the beautiful game, here in sunny Los Angeles, is FC Yahoo columnist Shahan Ahmed. Welcome, Shahan.
Hey, Joe. How you doing? Good to be back.
And joining us for the first time on the podcast via Skype, all the way from New York, is the one and only Leander Scharlakens, who can be seen everywhere in the FC Yahoo blog with his insight and opinions. Welcome, Leander.
Thank you, Joe. I feel very honored being on the second episode. I feel like the second man on the moon.
Well, guys, we are taping the show on the Friday before the return of the UEFA Champions League round of 16 first leg, so we won't know the results of the weekend's domestic fixtures, but we can still look ahead to the Champions League and break down the round of 16 matchups. I think we should start with the marquee matchup on Wednesday, February 17th, Roma versus Real Madrid. The big story there will be Zinedine Zidane, the former Real Madrid star who has taken over as Real Madrid manager. Shahan, what do you think of the job Zidane has done so far as Real Madrid boss?
I mean, he's come in and kind of taken charge right off the bat. They've won 4 and 5, and, I mean, the one draw they had was against Valencia, which, you know, we talked about Gary Neville last week. It doesn't really bode well, so to speak. But he's actually he's getting a lot out of James Rodriguez. He seems to have control in the locker room, so he hasn't really been tested. He'll get tested this weekend and then obviously next week in the Champions League. But so far, seems like he's actually doing a better job than most people gave him credit for when he first took over.
What do you think is the biggest reason why Real Madrid is kind of cleared up their issues or is playing so well under Zizou? Is there anything that you can identify that...
Well, I mean, he knows all the players, first of all, and, you know, being a former great player, there is that little bit of extra gravitas that Rafa did not have, I think it's fair to say. But, you know, he was involved in bringing a lot of these guys over. He's been involved in the club at some level for since the presidency... Blanking on the name.
Florentino Perez.
Since he came back, you know, Zidane's been kind of front and center for Real Madrid. So I think there is that added bit of just respect in the locker room for what the man means to the club itself, not just on an administrative level, but what he did as a player as well. And so far, I mean, they haven't really had any hiccups. I don't personally think that they're going to catch Barcelona. And if you really look at them in La Liga, they're 4 points back, but they've, you know, effectively lost the tiebreaker. You don't see them going and beating Barcelona 4-0, and it's head-to-head in La Liga. So with a game in hand, Barca, you could effectively say have like an 8-point lead in a sense, and no one's really expected to cut that type of ground on Barcelona and in this season especially. So I don't think the expectation is necessarily to win the league with him. So Europe kind of will judge how he does. Because, you know, they obviously got kicked out of the Copa del Rey for kind of that mix-up in terms of their squad. So I don't think there's as much pressure on him, to be honest with you. But it seems like so far the squad's reacting pretty well to him. He's way more likable guy than Rafa. Rafa's always been known as kind of a cold, icy figure. So I think that plays kind of a bigger role. Not that Zidane's like a warm, huggable teddy bear by any means. But, I think... He has respect. It's that simple. The players are listening to him, seemingly.
Leander, how will Real Madrid under a rookie manager in Zidane fare in the Champions League?
Well, that's a good question, and it's really hard to say because, like Shahan rightly points out, I mean, he's done pretty well so far, but he hasn't really been tested. I mean, he won 5-0 and 5-1 in his first league games, but that was against Deportivo La Coruña and Sporting Gijón, and then the other home game, he won 6-0 against Espanyol. But now if you look at his away games, he got a tie 1-1 at Betis Sevilla, and they sort of needed an equalizer in the 70th minute, and then they beat Granada, but it took an 85th minute winner from Luka Modric. So, you know, the teams that he's played, Deportivo is in ninth, and everybody else is 13th place or worse, and everybody knows how top-heavy La Liga is. And so it's kind of hard to judge him at this point, because what you tend to see with a new manager, especially when he's brought in the middle of the season, is something of a placebo effect, where, you know, all of a sudden everything is okay for a little while just because the team sort of have someone fresh to look at, you know, standing in front of them, and there's sort of a change of scenery of sorts in that regard. And sort of everything is kind of rejuvenated a little bit. And then, you know, the question becomes, how long does it last? You famously saw this with Tottenham, with Tim Sherwood, where all of a sudden they played quite well, and then everything kind of fell apart again. And you tend to see that. So he hasn't really been tested yet. And now they're playing in the Champions League. And everybody knows that the challenge there is very different. I mean, AS Roma isn't really on fire at the moment. I mean, they just had a two-month stretch in Serie A where they only won one of eight games. They've won three straight since, and they have a pretty strong attack, but they're not the best team in the world. But, you know, once you go into Europe, that's where you really tend to see the difference between teams that are deep and that are loaded with talent and teams that are well-managed. Because as Roberto Mancini has found out again and again and again, playing in Europe with Inter Milan and then with Manchester City, loading up on lots of big players allows you to dominate domestically pretty much throughout the season, because you're just going to push people away and you're just going to kind of blow them over. But when you get to Europe and every team is kind of loaded, you really need to be on point tactically. So this is going to be a litmus test, I think, for Zidane and how good he really is in that regard, which I think is pretty hard to say so far because we haven't really seen him do it yet. So we're going to, I think, have a much better sense of him and what his chances are of being a successful manager, whether at Real Madrid or anywhere else, after these games with Roma, and how he copes with the tactical aspect.
Other than Zidane's inexperience, is there any other reason for concern for Real Madrid? Landers mentioned Roma's form of late. They're going into the weekend again. We don't know what's going to happen with the weekend fixtures, but they're in fifth in Serie A at 44 points. They're 12 points behind leader Napoli. I'll throw this out to both of you guys. If there is one reason why Real Madrid can't get past Roma, other than Zidane's inexperience, what would that be?
Spalletti came in, and he's only been in charge for five matches. They had a draw. They lost to Juve 1-0, which is always respectable in Serie A, and they've won three in a row. Actually, they've won three in a row since El Shaarawy joined on loan from Milan, mm-hmm. or Monaco, however you want to look at it.
Yep.
And they have an option to buy him this summer. He's had two goals and an assist in the three matches. I think he has, 12 shots over those three games, and he had five shots in the last game alone. So he's come in and pretty much plugged in right away. They're using Perotti. Diego Perotti is kind of a false nine with Salah and El Shaarawy causing problems. So it's kind of a new-look Roma, so to speak. We don't really know. I mean, new manager, kind of a new look, and they have some zest about them right now that we'll see what comes out of it. But right now, I don't think that anyone really knows what Roma can be. I don't think Roma really knows. So it's kind of an unknown, and that should be somewhat scary to Real Madrid, because even they haven't really been tested, and they might actually get a good challenge in over 180 minutes.
All right, let's move on to the big matchup on Tuesday the 16th. Paris Saint-Germain welcomes Chelsea to the Parc des Princes. Leander, you can laugh at my French. That's 4 years of high school French, by the way. So the weekend before this fixture, PSG has 69 points, which gives them an incredible 24-point lead in Ligue 1 over second place Monaco, which has 45. Leander, I'll throw this to you. Will PSG's runaway domestic campaign help or hurt Laurent Blanc in the Champions League?
There's really two ways of looking at this. On the one hand, you know, they have yet to lose a league game this season. They've won 22 of them, and they've drawn 3. And, you know, that allows you the kind of cushion that they have now. It's not just 24 points over second place Monaco. It's also 30 points over third and fourth place Nice and Saint-Etienne. I mean, nobody is coming close. That race is completely run. And that allows you to sort of run out your reserves in the league and really spare and save your regulars for the Champions League, which is an advantage on the one hand. On the other, you need a little bit of competition. You need to have those reps. And, you know, the French league used to be a really balanced league until Olympique Lyon sort of won 7 or 8 times in a row. And it's kind of gone away since then. You know, there's probably a spectrum of how competitive leagues get, right? On the one hand, you probably, at one end of it, you have the Premier League, which is just totally brutal, and where every single game is a hard game and difficult game. It doesn't matter if you're playing a championship contender or someone who's trying to avoid being relegated. Every game is hard, and every game is taxing. And that's had a really obvious and difficult effect on England's teams when they've gone into Europe. I mean, it's just hard for them to compete against teams that just don't have it so difficult every single weekend. On the other end of the spectrum is probably where PSG is now, where you've got a league that's so lopsided that you're not really being challenged. And that, you know, you can play at 70% and you can rotate guys in and out, and you're still going to sort of win every week at a canter. And, you know, not each one of Paris Saint-Germain's games has been easy. I mean, they just won 2-1 over Olympique Marseille, and that took a 77th-minute winner by Angel Di Maria. But, you know, you kind of look at their list of results, and there's a 5-1 in there, another 5-1, a 4-1, a 5-0, a 4-1, a 4-1. There's a lot of those games. And if the players aren't getting difficult games regularly, there's a certain muscle memory there for playing hard games that I think goes away. Because if you look at their schedule, really the last time they played a properly good team was Real Madrid in November. So it's been, you know, 3 months since they've had a really big test. So you wonder at what point that comes back to bite them.
Sean, when people talk about PSG, the spotlight falls on Zlatan Ibrahimovic. You've kind of crunched the numbers to see how he's done on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Kind of give us some insight as to how well or how much of a concern Zlatan is and how important is he to PSG's hopes of Champions League glory?
I mean, he's immensely important, obviously. It's Zlatan. He's one of those dynamic players and characters on the pitch. You know, it's kind of odd because, yes, he would go out in the round of 16 pretty regularly with Inter. At Barcelona, I know he was there for a short stint. They were in the semifinals. I don't know if you necessarily give him credit for that. I don't think Pep would give him credit for that.
No.
He hasn't been great. Last year, obviously, he got the red card, and they still made it through past Chelsea, which I'm sure is a sore subject for you, Joe.
I still have visions of David Luiz and his big floppy hair celebrating.
Well, that's one thing to, you know, to think about is the defense for PSG has actually been incredible. I mean, yes, Leander's talking about how there's not really that much competition in the league, but they've scored 63 and only allowed 12, which is phenomenal. And then we go back to the Champions League, you know, in the group stages, they scored 12 and only allowed 1. And that 1 was to Real Madrid in a 1-0 when PSG hit the woodwork, I think, twice in that second leg, or not second leg, but the game at the Bernabeu. They really should have probably won that game. The first one was 0-0. They were clearly going to just shut it down, and they did, which to do that against a good team which, okay, you can say whatever you want to about Rafa's Real Madrid, but they were scoring a good amount of goals back then. So PSG's shown that defensively they can shore it up. I think Zlatan is playing really, really well and a little bit more comfortably than he has in years past. It seems like the age getting up there is kind of freed him up a little bit. So I don't really think that – I always thought that it was a little bit unfair, the round of 16 record thing that they always throw at him, because, to be honest, like, it was more Mancini than it was necessarily Zlatan when he was at Inter. That showed itself when Mancini went to Man City, kind of like Leander mentioned earlier. So, I mean, I personally want him to do well because I just think that the guy is – put him in the spotlight and he'll say something great. So I want to hear him say something.
We love – we love Zlatan. We love it when he talks. Let's talk about potential of Angel Di Maria being the X factor for PSG in their hopes of a run to the Champions League final.
Yeah, he's by all accounts, he's been great. He's slotted in perfectly. You know, he was the man of the match in the Champions League when Real Madrid did the decima. So even though he had that little blip at Manchester United, seems to have not affected him in the least when he showed up at PSG. And yeah, he's kind of the little X factor that's seemingly going to put them over the top. Now, there's some talk of Lavezzi possibly even getting bought out and going to China. And I think Di Maria adds that stability where even if something like that happened, it wouldn't really rattle the team too much because his quality is really unquestioned. And we saw it in the World Cup until he went down with Argentina too. Saw it in the Copa America until he went down with Argentina. So as long as they can keep him healthy, I think he gives them a finishing final factor that they just needed desperately last year and frankly in years prior too. I genuinely think that PSG is probably in that 1A category where they're just maybe slightly behind Bayern and Barca, but we won't really know until they play each other. So they have the quality. They have the players. It's a matter of whether or not they can put it together for over two legs or one leg if they meet one of those teams in the final.
Chelsea is unbeaten under interim manager Goose Hiddink, but I am not expecting the Blues to somehow ruin PSG's run in the Champions League. You know, I think it really falls on whether Eden Hazard plays like Eden Hazard, and he's had some fitness issues lately. He's been coming off the bench. I'll throw it out to both of you. Does Chelsea have any chance of moving on to the last eight? Leander?
No. I just don't see it. Chelsea, even running the way they did last year, would have had a hard time, because the thing to remember about this Paris Saint-Germain team and the Leonardo, when he was their technical director, even said this publicly, although he shouldn't have, that PSG is built for Europe. It's like everything they do in terms of building that club is oriented towards winning the Champions League. And you can see that. They have that depth and they have that creativity and they have that firepower. And just the way Chelsea's been going, even if they've turned things around somewhat under Guus Hiddink, I just don't see them being competitive with PSG right now. Sorry, Joe.
No apologies needed. That is the reality check that I need. Let's take a quick timeout. After the break, we'll discuss the big storylines for the second week of the Champions League round of 16 first legs, namely the state of Bayern Munich under Pep Guardiola. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, direct from the FC Yahoo Soccer blog at yahoosports.com. And if you're looking for a sports radio morning show that is just a little bit more entertaining and has a little bit of fun, along with all your coverage of sports every morning, check out the Steve Zabin Show, direct from Yahoo Sports Radio.
Now, he is keenly aware of what other players have been saying about him. Aqib Talib, he tapped out. TJ Ward, he must have been saving himself for the offseason. Frank Clark, quote, on Twitter, that boy a...
Frank Clark plays behind Michael Bennett on the left side.
Yes. Okay. Now,
I can't wait to play his punk ass.
I can't wait to play his punk ass.
Yes.
Right.
Wolverine.
Now, people quickly jumped on Frank Clark and said, yeah, he's already beaten you guys twice. And then he kind of backtracked saying, all right, I'll give him some credit. He's like, the boy's good, but still.
Steve Zabin, mornings, 6 a.m. until 10 a.m. Eastern on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Listen live and check out the podcast of The Steve Zabin Show, yahoosportsradio.com.
It's time to get back to everything football and soccer from across the world. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast from Yahoo Sports Radio and Yahoo Sports. Once again, your host, Joe Lago.
Welcome back to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, episode number 2. I am Joe Lago, editor of the FC Yahoo Soccer blog on Yahoo Sports. Joining me are FC Yahoo columnists Shahan Ahmed and Leander Charlakins. You can find their fabulous insight every week on the Yahoo Sports Soccer page, sports.yahoo.com/soccer, in the FC Yahoo Soccer blog. Gentlemen, on February the 23rd, Juventus takes on Bayern Munich in the first leg of their Champions League round of 16 fixture. Leander, will Bayern's season be a failure if they don't win the Champions League?
Well, with Bayern right now, it's all about Pep Guardiola because he's the manager, and wherever he goes, it's all about him. That's just how it seems to go. And since he has announced that this is his last season, since he's off to Manchester City next year, it kind of all boils down to, you know, does he leave having won the Champions League? So I think if they don't win it, it will be seen that way. And the awkward thing here is that for all of his success with Bayern, if he doesn't win it, he actually won't have done as well as the guy before him by some measures. Because Jupp Heynckes, they said that the year before Pep came along, that was going to be his last year. They originally told the press that he was retiring, which turned out not to be true, even though he did retire, but that sort of wasn't his call. And Heynckes, before he left, actually won the treble. He won the Bundesliga, he won the German Cup, and he won the Champions League. And Pep has yet to replicate that. They've played some sparkling soccer. They're obviously a very, very good team. But until he matches that, you know, there are some people that might say that his Bayern tenure was not all it should have been or could have been. So I think it will be really interesting. And of course, the first barrier he'll have to clear is a Juventus team that's been absolutely on fire in Italy. And that was a defending finalist, not to forget, in the Champions League last year.
Shahan, how do you see Juve's chances against Pep's Bayern? And if they're going to have any chance of an upset, what might that be? What would be the determining factor?
I actually think their chances are surprisingly good, better than most people give them credit for. I mean, the 14-match club record in Serie A is getting a lot of attention. They've actually won 12 in a row, and these are wins, not unbeaten streaks. These are actually winning streaks, which are rare in soccer. They've won 12 in a row across all competitions, going back to when they lost to Man City on the final match of Champions League, which is why they're playing Bayern and Man City's playing Dynamo Kiev. Kind of a big match to lose on that one. I think how they would do it is Paulo Dybala. He's been, or Dybala.
Dybala.
Yeah, I said it backwards. He's been phenomenal. Really, really stood out, and it took him a while to adjust to Juve. And recently, he's really had that good run of games that he really needed. 6 goals and 5 assists in his last 9 games. You know, he was scoreless and assistless in the group stages. So in order for Juve to do anything, they need Dybala to show up in the Champions League. I mean, Pogba will get all the credit, and he should. He's an integral part of that team. Marquinhos has been actually healthy this year and helping them out as well. But Buffon obviously gets that shot out. But really what it comes down to is they need that Morata and Dybala combo, the young strikers that they have, to click. And if they can click, they might be able to upset Bayern. And, you know, Leander said the team that went last year, it's not really the same team because Pirlo went, Tevez went, you know, Vidal went. They lost essentially their center core of that team, and if they get by Bayern, you would actually think that's a team. This team, the way that they're going right now, the winning streaks that they're on, they could potentially make it back to the final, looking completely different than they did just 12 months ago,
which would be amazing.
Yeah, it'd be incredible, and they're young kids too. That's what's great about it.
Well, on the same day as Juve Bayern, Arsenal will be taking on Barcelona in the first leg of their round of 16 fixture in London at the Emirates Stadium. It took a miracle for the Gunners to get through. Shahan, what miracles have to happen for Arsenal to avoid another round of 16 exit?
Well, the front trio of Messi, Suarez, and Neymar need to go scoreless. That would actually be a miracle, since Barcelona doesn't really do that. You know, Alexis is back. Arsenal's getting healthy at the right time. Francis Coquelin's coming back as well. Defensively, I just don't think that they can start Mertesacker, because Barca's not really a team known for just putting in crosses and winning aerial battles. And Mertesacker is just too, you know, slow-footed to do anything against those guys the way that they pass. So I think they might end up going with Gabriel, which I haven't been convinced by him at all. So it gets, you know, I'm getting downtrodden already, and I'm supposed to be the optimist on Arsenal. You know how you do it?
You're failing at that.
Well, you know how you would do it, and, you know, Joe, you would understand better than anybody else, is the Chelsea model, which is you have Petr Cech in the back, who is a great goal stopper. You have to not try and play with Barcelona. You have to actually try and hold and play on the counter. And, you know, Arsenal does have some pacey guys that they can put out there. They do have a really good shot stopper. If they can plug it in properly, they could, you know, play Mourinho negative football. And, you know, they've done that with Man City a couple times in the last couple of years, but they're not really known for it. They would kind of have to play out of character, which makes sense since Barca's pretty much smoking everyone in Europe right now.
Yeah, so I think it would take Petr Cech, just to borrow a hockey term, standing on his head and Arsenal defending as if their lives depended on it. Leander, you know, let's talk about Barcelona. In the first episode of our podcast, along with Alex Baker, we deemed Barcelona as the team to beat. What do you think is their biggest concern right now, if there are any?
I think it's fair that they're the team to beat. I do note that, you know, the teams that have made Barca uncomfortable this year, and most notably Athletic Bilbao, even though they sort of got overrun the last time around, losing 6-0, they actually threatened them for a while early on, and they beat them 4-0 in the Supercopa before the season in the first leg by sort of pressing them and by playing a very Barcelona game against Barcelona. And there's really two ways of trying to combat them. There's bunkering in and hoping for the best, which tends not to work. And there's trying to sort of play with them and play the same game, which tends not to work either. But, you know, between the two, that might actually give Arsenal the best chance of being competitive with them. But, you know, if you do look at concerns, I mean, this is another all-time great incarnation of a dynasty that has to surely be considered the best club team run by anybody ever. Even I think 1960s Real Madrid doesn't really stack up. But Barca does have sort of a soft spot, I think, in central defense. I mean, it's the one place, and, you know, by reinforcing central midfield with Rakitic and Arda Turan, who they're playing centrally quite a lot, it seems, I think they solved sort of that problem. But if you look at their squad in defense, you know, on the right and on the left, they're okay. They've got Dani Alves on the right and Alex Vidal. But on the left, they have Jordi Alba and Adriano, who's getting on a little bit. They're okay there. But centrally, they basically have Gerard Piqué, who can be gaffe-prone on big occasions. You've got Mascherano, who's been sort of solid. Vermaelen is made of glass. Bartra doesn't always quite stand up to scrutiny at the really top games. And Jeremy Mathieu is more of a left back by trade. And so I think if they have a soft spot, if they have a concern, it's in central defense, where they're still not super, super convincing. Now, if they play the Barcelona game and they have 60-70% of possession, that's not an issue. But if Arsenal really runs at them and makes them uncomfortable, I think that could be a factor, especially if maybe one of those guys is having a bad game or somebody gets hurt again.
Yeah, the one thing to also keep in mind is that, you know, Alexis knows these guys really well. He practiced against them all the time. So seeing those, I mean, they know him well too, which might not work in his advantage, but he's played against Piqué, he's played against Mascherano. He probably knows their defensive tendencies. So in pressing Barcelona, if Arsenal goes that way, you might see Alexis take advantage of something that most players wouldn't know about, and that could be what Arsenal really do need, is just that little bit of an extra edge.
And that's also true, I think, for Mesut Ozil and Santi Cazorla. I mean, Arsenal is a team that's really familiar with Barcelona, not just from having played each other a lot, but sort of their players have been in each other's orbit quite a lot.
Guys, I think even the most optimistic Arsenal supporter expects Barcelona to go through. But let's talk about the fallout. Arsene Wenger, has Arsenal 5 points behind right now going to the weekend, behind Leicester City in the Premier League. If on top of, let's say, Arsenal doesn't win the league, which is supposed to be the year everyone was giving a chance to, and then they crash out of the round of 16 in the Champions League, is there going to be any consequence on Arsene Wenger and his jobs?
You're seeing me smiling. Of course not. Of course not. I mean, he's taken them to the group stage of the Champions League 17 years in a row. They've gotten knocked out in the round of 16, going back to 2011 consecutively, and it would take a miracle. I think we've all decided for them to make it past Barcelona this year. I just don't think that the expectations are there on that front. I think if they lose the Premier League, it's up to him, right? Arsene has the power at that club. Even when the fans get upset, even when he doesn't spend in the transfer market, no matter what he does, he seems to always get by because he gets them back in the Champions League. They always finish top four. They're competitive in the league to some extent. They have young talent that looks like it's always, blossoming and blooming, but seemingly doesn't ever mature properly to the point where you are actually winning the right trophies. I think that he'll get a pass. Like, he's always gotten a pass, and he's earned a lot of that. So I can't necessarily fault him in this case. Yeah, I mean, he's going to get knocked out. I'd be surprised if they even are competitive, to be honest with you.
My feeling on Wenger is that if he was going to get fired, he would have gotten fired a very long time ago. Especially sort of those fallow years before they started winning FA Cups again. If he wasn't going to get bounced then, I don't think he's going to. I think at Arsenal, the philosophy structurally is sort of the same as it was at United under Alex Ferguson, and that's even if things aren't great right now, we still think this guy gives us the best chance to be better down the line, and we don't see anybody that could make us better over the coming period. They always have had that long-term outlook, and the short-term is always kind of maybe sacrificed a little bit in that equation, but I just don't see it happening. I mean, this isn't sort of, even if they come second or third in the league and they don't win anything and they're bounced in the round of 16 again, he'll have the excuse that, well, we drew Barcelona again. And they've had much worse seasons than this, whether in terms of where they finished or, they would come fourth, but where they've just looked worse and not even been competitive for the title, and he's kept his job. So I just don't see it.
All right, those are the big storylines for the Champions League round of 16. It's prediction time, guys. there are eight matchups. We only talked about four of them, but we're going to go through one by one, starting with Benfica against Zenit St. Petersburg. Shahan?
I'm going to go with Benfica. Zenit's just been on that winter break, and here's a stat for you. Benfica has won 9 and drawn 1 with no losses and outscored their opposition 32-8. Since Zenit last played a game.
Leander?
I'm going to actually be a contrarian and go with Zenit. I mean, Shahan makes some really good points, but I just don't think the Portuguese league is all that strong right now. And even though Zenit hasn't played a game in 3 months, they're a pretty strong team. And those Russian teams sort of understand how to bridge that big winter break. I think they're going to come out pretty good. And I think they'll take it, but it's going to be very close.
To follow up on Leander, do keep an eye on Artem Zyuba, who had six goals in the group stages, along with two assists. Russian guy, 27-year-old, but he's hitting the target these days.
I'll make note of that for my daily fantasy soccer lineup for Champions League. Let's move on to PSG Chelsea. We already touched on it, but let's make it official.
PSG
Shahan. PSG?
Yeah.
Leander?
Same thing. Just too much firepower, I think, for a wobbly Chelsea team to overcome.
Okay, I'm going to rely on Leander to pronounce. It's KAA Ghent. Is it Ghent?
Hent.
Okay. So we have Hent against Wolfsburg of the Bundesliga. Shahan.
I'm going to go with Hent because Wolfsburg has been abysmal since the Champions League, they haven't won since they beat Manchester United in that final group tie. So, yeah, I'm not taking Wolfsburg on this one. They've been nothing since they got rid of De Bruyne.
Leander?
I'm going to go with Wolfsburg, and that's because Gent is a great story, and I appreciate it, having grown up in Belgium. But even a bad Wolfsburg is a much better team, I think. You know, that they haven't had a good year, but there is a lot of talent on that team. You know, I'm not going to say Niklas Bentner, but Julian Draxler, Max Kruse, Bas Dost, Andre Schürrle. There's a lot there. They have a lot of weapons that I think Gent won't have an answer for.
I'll add in a little bit on the back of that. Max Kruse has not scored in his last 9 starts, and Bas Dost actually got injured in training by Dante's tackle, so he's definitely out for the first leg, maybe back for the second leg. He, though, was on a scoreless run, too, before he went out, so they've just been in bad form.
So take that, Leander Sherlock. Roma, Real Madrid.
Real.
Leander?
Real Madrid.
All right, Arsenal versus Barcelona. Shahan.
No, I'm just joking. Barcelona.
I was waiting for you to come up with a surprise here. Leander, to make it official.
Barcelona, and I kind of worry for Arsenal that if in the first leg Barcelona goes ahead quickly, it could get very ugly.
All right. Juventus versus Bayern Munich. Shahan.
I'm really torn on this one, but I will definitely go with Bayern. Just, you got to expect Pep to pull him out. But I really think that this is one of those where Juve could do the upset, and it would not shock me.
And I'll go for Bayern as well. I think this Juve team is a little bit short on experience with all the guys they lost.
Let's move on to two other big matchups, the last two. Dynamo Kiev against Manchester City of the Premier League. Shahan.
I will take Man City just because Aguero's going, but I don't see Man City going too much further than this just because in the back they just haven't convinced me at all. And as long as Vincent Kompany is struggling with form and health, and yeah, I mean health more than even form, I just don't think that Man City is a real contender.
Leander?
I'll go with Manchester City as well to reach the quarterfinals for the first time in their existence in the Champions League.
And last but not least, PSV Eindhoven against Atletico Madrid. Shahan.
Atletico. Antoine Griezmann is probably one of my favorite players to watch. He has 12 goals in La Liga. He had 4 in the group stage. Atleti actually has a chance at catching Barcelona because they frankly don't have to play them head-to-head anymore, so they won't drop any points there. Griezmann, you know, he's kind of key to and central to that team. He only managed 1 goal over 4 appearances when Atleti had this little 5-match blip where they went winless. They fell out of the Spanish Cup on that one and lost to Barca, obviously. So I think that Atleti kind of they've righted the ship now. Jackson Martinez has obviously gone to China. Torres, there's some talk about him potentially coming to MLS. But I think Atleti is just too good, and PSV really shouldn't have made it. It was more of an indictment on Manchester United than it was necessarily on PSV being great.
Leander.
With immense glee as an Ajax fan, I will say that Atletico goes through.
All right, guys, thanks. Once again, you can find the fabulous insight of Shahan Ahmed and Leander Sharlaxens every week on the Yahoo Sports Soccer page. At sports.yahoo.com/soccer in the fabulous FC Yahoo Soccer blog. Until next time, thanks everybody. Thanks for tuning in.